Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined by me. I am solo podcasting today. I took a tiny break from solo podcasting, and heads up, there will be another one. I have so many amazing podcast interviews in the queue and felt it was important to prioritize those over my own rambling podcasts. Alas, I was starting to get backed up with the things that I wanted to talk about, so I am weighing in myself today. Before we dive in, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to tell all your friends to subscribe to Word Up with Danny Katz, because the more the merriest. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. And there are so many announcements. So I'm speaking at the Confluence Gathering in Bandera, Texas in May. I'm not exactly sure of the dates or of the dates of the workshop that I am leading. And I encourage you to use the link in this podcast description to learn more about it and to register immediately. When you register with my link and with the promo code KATZ10, those are the numbers, KATZ10, you will get 10% off registration. Confluence is a phenomenal conference for freedom lovers, for those who are building the new earth, people who are not buying into any left-right divides, people who understand that viruses are fake, that news is fake, that political parties are fake, and that we are the ones that we have been waiting for. Confluence is a phenomenal place to attend workshops and gather tools to create the new society. There are going to be talks and workshops on homesteading, on quantum languaging, on lawfulness, on emotional intelligence, on health and wellness. Everything that you and me and all of us need to fully extricate ourselves from the false control matrix and start a way better and more fun game. There is also a children's unschooling village. It is very family friendly. So if you're thinking you want to come, but what are you going to do about the littles? Bring them along. They have all these programs. I don't know if it's all these programs, but they have a really cool program with lots of education and entertainment for the littles. And I would love to see you there. So check that out. Also letting you know that I am teaching an upcoming college level, it's going to be high school and college level quantum languaging course through the Apocatastasis Institute. I believe that's going to be starting in March. More details to follow, but another great reason to sign up for my newsletter so that you can stay abreast of these awesome events and courses and offerings and be the first to sign up. Last piece, we are getting into a lot of propaganda today, and I'm excited to announce that I have slashed the offering, the compensation numbers on my Pop Propaganda homeschool course. It used to be priced at $397, which I thought was a stellar deal, and I received some feedback that that was a little bit of a stretch for some parentals who wanted to enroll their teens. And so I am really inspired to get this course out to as many people as possible. So Pop Propaganda is now available through my website for the low, low compensatory number of $249 gets you all 11 modules. It is a one of a kind course. No one else on planet Earth is offering a propaganda media literacy course tailored for teens and grownups alike and created by a real deal journalist, AKA me. So run, don't walk, over to either my website, dannykatz.com, or poppropaganda.com. Register immediately. When you register, you get lifetime access to all 11 modules, and it is so chock full. All right, I think that does it for housekeeping. Let's take a sip. Fair warning, today's show is going to be focused mostly on social engineering and propaganda and critical thinking, which are passions of mine. So if you are one of my beautiful audience members who is only interested in my quantum languaging, you might want to skip today's podcast. Hopefully you won't. And just in the same way that Joe Rogan does his like MMA specific podcasts, which are obviously tailored towards people who like that stuff, I'm going to be delivering these caveats as a means of dodging the emails attempting to tell me what to talk about in my podcast. So here we go. Few things are on the agenda. Where to start? Okay, let's start. Sometimes I strategize to save some of the more polarizing topics for the end. We're not doing that today. We're just diving in full frontal, as they say. I'm not sure if that's an appropriate phrase, but I'm gonna stick with it. So, Santa Fe is we received a pretty large influx of Californians in the past 4 years. A lot of people from California, a lot of people from New York who weren't happy with, what was happening to their cities due to lockdowns, due to globalist agenda, all of those things, and they moved to Santa Fe. And there is for sure a lot of controversy in the community because, and I say this as a Californian who moved to northern New Mexico back in 2011, there is a difference in worldviews and perspectives and approaches, and a lot of the native New Mexicans are not very appreciative of the kind of brash, overbearing, like loud, obnoxious, superior seeming attitudes that very often come along with these California transplants. Because of the fires in Los Angeles, we have started to receive the next wave. It's been very interesting for me as a native Californian to observe the behavior that frustrates and offends my native New Mexican friends, and I've started to be able to see it from a more objective lens. And it's something that I noticed myself when I first moved to New Mexico, how like, oh, it seemed like people from Los Angeles were kind of naturally like more expressive, more theatrical, more demonstrative. I've never been an actress per se, but I think it's something that just kind of that culture has infused into me a little bit. But what I've noticed, and I notice this in terms of like self-reflection in places where I can adjust myself to the New Mexico culture, because as someone who's been traveling the world on my own since my 20s, one of the cardinal rules of visiting any other country or culture is defer to their culture, take on their cultural standards as a show of respect. I went to India for the first time in 99, and I already knew enough to, cover my knees, cover my shoulders, which was interesting because I had gone to India to study yoga with Sri K. Pattabhi Joyce. So in the yoga shala, I was wearing short sleeve t-shirts instead of tank tops and long tights because that was the culture. There were these two sisters who taught cooking classes, and they caught me like my first week in India when I was leaving the yoga shala, and one of them gifted me a barrette. And she showed me that the cultural norm was to not leave one's hair long and down, but in fact to tie it up and back. And I was so appreciative of her taking the time and being so generous as to give me a barrette and made a point of like being very respectful. Same when I was, traveling in Morocco or traveling in Indonesia, you cover yourself, you show respect to the local culture. And so I've been studying Californians through the lens of native New Mexicans to learn where I would be wise to adjust my behavior to what is really like a way more male-dominated, Catholic conservative culture. Anyway, all of this is to say, I pulled up to the mail place this week and I saw this woman who was like dressed super cute. I hadn't seen her before. I'm like, oh, she must be new in town or visiting. And she came out of the coffee house that's next to my mailbox place. And I saw her go to a Mercedes with California license plate. And I am in the process of transmuting the inclination to roll my eyes and cultivate not so positive thoughts about the influx of Californians, because there are wonderful Californians who are coming here. So I go into my mail place. I get my mail. I have a conversation with the people who work there. As I'm coming out, I notice this woman who I clocked with the California license plate coming in. So I open the door and I hold the door open for her. And as she walks past me, as I'm holding the door, she takes a mask that I hadn't seen that was around her neck and holds it up to her mouth. She doesn't just put it on, she just holds it there as she walks past me and then lets it go as she passes. So any feelings of goodwill that I had been attempting to cultivate towards this woman were completely obliterated in the shattering of the social contract that happened as she communicated, "Get away from you, disgusting cootie riddled, infectious vermin," as she walked past me. And it's like, you know, some of the culture, some of us have went a little crazy by swallowing the indoctrination and the mind control around COVID and this, you know, ridiculous kind of intelligence test that was like, how many of these morons are going to muzzle themselves because we tell them to, even though it does not make sense on any dimension whatsoever, when we consider the size of so-called viruses, if we're buying into that narrative and haven't done our research, and then the size of the weave of these other things. But then again, the whole ridiculousness of like, well, let's wear a mask into a restaurant, but we'll take it off when we sit at our seats because COVID only exists at like 5 feet and above, or like takes a break. I mean, I don't need to go into it because it's 2025 and that whole thing is so freaking stupid. And if you're tuning into my podcast, you get it. But what was never addressed during that time was the deep, deep damage that was being done to the social contract by encouraging humans to treat one another like infectious vermin. And what's coming to mind is, you know, I think we were 2 years into COVID, probably 3 years into, yeah, no, 2.5 years into COVID, and they reopened the improv school that I ultimately got banned from for saying faggy in a skit. But before that happened, I walked into the room on the first day of class and I saw a woman who I'd known, and I went over and I sat down next to her and started chatting. And as I sat down next to her and was saying hi, she was doing her best to maintain eye contact and go through like the generalized social niceties at the same time as she dug through her purse for a mask, brought it out and put it on while we were talking. And it's like, what effect did she think that was gonna have on me and whatever feelings I was cultivating towards her? Obviously she didn't care because her indoctrination had her thinking, oh, this person is an infectious cootie and we need to protect ourselves instantly. But it's like, again, the complete lack of logic around, she was sitting in a room full of people and it wasn't a problem until I sat down next to her and then I became the problem, but how are we gonna do improv together? Like, whatever. But I thought all that was done. And then I realized with this woman at the mailbox place, I'm like, okay, it's not just dealing with the next batch of Californians who are going to move here. It's dealing with their mind control that is also coming here. My point here is the damage that is being done to the social contract and how that has become so secondary to demonstrating our obedience to the lizards who would seek to control and enslave and murder us all, and how it's really freaking lame. And I'm not going to pretend that it's not having an effect on me and that it's not making me want to steer clear of these people who are so caught up in their mind control that they have no respect for the social contract, especially when they're in a town that is not their own. And I'm not saying this to pull some sort of like tribal territorial thing, though I'd be lying if I said that that like primal territorial thing wasn't absolutely coursing through my every blood cell and takes quite a lot of conscious work when I'm in groups of people to not defer to like a completely like primal territorial alpha means of behaving, which is certainly a natural inclination for me. But it's just being aware of, I notice this when I go to the hot springs, right? And you go to a hot spring where there are multiple tubs. When I walk into a tub, I defer to the existing culture of the tub before I get into it. So if I'm walking into a tub where people are talking loudly and being jovial, I'm not going to walk into the tub and shush them because this is the culture, this is the established culture of this hot spring that I am choosing to enter into. By the same token, if I walk into a hot tub where everyone is silent with their eyes closed, I'm not going to start talking loudly. It's like being aware and considerate of the existing social culture, be it in a hot spring, be it in a yoga class, being it in a movie theater, right? Like when I'm in a movie theater, I prefer silence. But I remember when I did a summer internship in DC, I was working for the Smithsonian. You go to a movie theater in DC, and that is an interactive experience. All the audience members are talking at the screen, are talking to the characters. For me to walk into a theater in DC and shush the audience, because that's my preference, is completely out of alignment, and it is me disrespecting the existing culture in a DC movie theater. So it's like when people are coming to Santa Fe, I saw this happen in our dance community, and the Californians came into our dance community, took over, changed it to their preference, and then ditched it in its like broken state. Now, it's a little bit different with the muzzling because that's like a culture of mind control and obedience and stupidity. And I can't say that there isn't a bunch of that here, but it would be like me going to Texas during lockdown and trying to shame people in the grocery store for not muzzling themselves versus acknowledging, like, I'm in Texas. They don't do this here. I'm going to adjust. But I just wanted to like make the very clear point on the destruction of the social contract and how I'm not seeing that being acknowledged or healed or prioritized in any way. Like, especially if you're in another town and it's like, well, don't you want to be friendly to the locals? Don't you want to be on good terms with the locals? It's like I have land out in the sticks. And I used to do all my work of like cutting and clearing on Sundays, which would rile up the local dogs. And then I had a friend who was a local to that area, and he's like, Danny, you're not making any friends. It's Sunday. People want to relax. You're riling up their dogs because you're in work mode, and that's not in alignment with like your neighborhood, right? So I adjusted based on that. So if there are any Californians, New Yorkers, whatnot, who are, moving to different, smaller or more rural cultures, I am encouraging you and me and all of us to learn the local culture and customs and to defer to those instead of trying to barrel over them with your own personal preferences when they're not in alignment with the existing structure. Excuse me, culture. And this absolutely applies to hot springs because nothing infuriates me more than when I'm in a quiet, silent hot spring and someone comes in and just wants to like ramble and be loud or turn on their music or be on their phone. And in speaking of which, like, can we not with the phones in the hot springs? Like, people are there to relax. And like, I feel like people aren't remembering that phones are recording devices. And so you're bringing a recording device into a peaceful setting where people are in their bathing suits. Like, they're like, please be respectful. But I don't want this to be like a giant kvetch fest. So I think I'm gonna leave it there and hydrate. Okay, so I went to my local city council meeting last weekend, and this is bringing me to two different topics that we're going to unpack here. So there's all this hullabaloo going on right now in Santa Fe with the restoration of the obelisk, and I'm going to get into it in a moment. But a friend of mine wanted to go to the city council meeting to talk about the obelisk situation, and he is a native of Santa Fe. It's a topic upon which I don't feel qualified to opine in those official capacities because I'm not from here, and it really is about more the local culture. But he asked for my support in going to the city council meeting. So I thought, all right, well, I'll speak about, you know, one of the topics that I'm most passionate about here, which is healing the real estate market and specifically the rental market. So I went to the city council meeting and my proposal was we need to get rid of Airbnb and VRBO. So I watched Airbnb start to destroy Los Angeles back in the 2000 teens. Yeah, it was the 2000 teens when Airbnb came in and all of a sudden rent prices skyrocketed because people were renting their places not to people who lived in the local communities, were invested in the local communities, but to people coming in from out of town. And so they could, you know, charge way more than what, you know, one's daily rent would be when we do the math for a monthly rent by renting out, you know, extra rooms or guest houses or the entire home for, you know, days and weeks at a time. And so I watched back in Los Angeles, the rental market be like go through the roof in the worst of ways. And I saw how it affected Los Angeles because all of a sudden people weren't invested in the health of their neighborhood or the health of their community. They were invested in greed and how much money can I get for this room, for this, you know, for my apartment, what have you. And so it wasn't about landlords vetting people because they would be good neighbors, because they would be considerate, because, you know, they had a decent rental history. It's just who's going to pay top dollar per night. And granted, you know, a lot of other things contributed to the downfall of Los Angeles, specifically the internet, right? And posting things like, oh, this park is the best place to get a picture of the Hollywood sign. And what used to be like this sleepy park where no one ever was now overrun with tourists and cameras and, you know, stuff like that happening all the time. So it became clear to me that I was no longer aligned with what was happening in Los Angeles. So I did a road trip all the way up to Vancouver Island, teaching workshops along the way, on the way there and on the way back, and just scoping out a whole, all the other cities to see, are these places where I would like to live? This was back in 2019, and what I learned from that trip is Airbnb is ruining every single city in which it exists. There are no exceptions. When I moved back to Santa Fe in 2019, and just to give you an idea, I left Santa Fe in 2015. I was renting a one-bedroom casita with a sleeping loft, and a beautiful gated patio, and I was paying $800 a month. When I moved back to Santa Fe, there was absolutely nothing available. It wasn't even a matter of like, this is out of my price range or this is gross. There wasn't anything. And the only way I found a temporary residence was by calling or emailing every single listing on Airbnb and on VRBO and negotiating with the landlords to see if they would give me, you know, a 2 to 3 month rental while I found something more permanent. And to do that, I was paying $1,400 a month for like a really unspectacular, like nothing special, one bedroom in a triplex. So already my rent had almost doubled and I only got that for 3 months. And then I've just watched it devolve and get even worse and worse and worse. Now, the problem with Airbnb, there's so many problems. But when I first brought this up in like some community conversations that we get rid of Airbnb and VRBO, because right now in Santa Fe, we have over 3,000 rental units that instead of going to local residents who live and work here, who are invested in giving back to Santa Fe, in making Santa Fe a sustainable, peaceful, abundant, you know, like fun place to live, we have 3,000 units that are going to transients who are coming in and out, who are not invested at all in the health and well-being of Santa Fe, in the health and safety of the neighborhood, right? Someone's renting an Airbnb, they don't know, oh, that car doesn't really belong in this neighborhood. Oh, that guy who's been sitting in front of that car casing that house all day, he doesn't live here. That's a little suspect. If, you know, someone rents an Airbnb next door and they're having a loud, wild party and I say, hey guys, can you keep it down? It's 2 a.m. They don't care about their relationship with me. They're not cultivating some sort of healthy, mutually respectful, neighborly relationship. They have nothing to lose by saying, screw you, we'll be as loud as we want. So it renders all of our neighborhoods less safe. And when I've spoken to the city council members here, they all own their houses, so they don't really care. And it's like, okay, but what if your neighbor is renting out their house to some Airbnb rando group of people who are not minding or invested in the safety and well-being and respectfulness of your neighborhood? Like, it works against all of us. And then there's the greed factor, right? Because I've heard people say, well, what if someone needs the extra income by renting out their casita? Great, rent it out to someone who lives here. Rent it out to someone who works in the community, who lives in the community, who is invested in the community. And then I've heard some of the other pushback I've heard is, well, where will the tourists stay? In hotels? Like, why don't we support our local businesses who took major hits during the COVID nonsense? So, like, it's such a win-win. We get rid of Airbnbs. All of those rental units go to people who live in our communities, and we bring the prices down to some to a reasonable monthly rent instead of this jacked up nightly situation. And then tourists who are coming through can give their business to the hotels, which strengthens our economy. Like, on all levels, it makes the most sense. The only people who lose are the greedy people who want to jack the prices and make the most money possible and have no interest in the health and well-being of the communities. And what I find so interesting here I believe New Mexico is a red state, and I don't believe in red blue. I've never been a Republican, and I've never been a Democrat. I care about none of that. But what I have noticed here is it's those who claim to want diversity and equity and inclusion, it's that group of people who have no problem jacking the prices of their Airbnbs to make the most money. So it's like, it's all this conceptual, abstract, virtue signaling and posturing on social media or out in the world with their, like, you know, whatever, rainbow flag stickers or muzzles or what have you. It's all like empty optics, but when push comes to shove and the rubber meets the road, they have no problem screwing over the local community in favor of the most deflated dollars. The hypocrisy is just the grodiest. The other idea that I had, but I was a little bit nervous, so I forgot to bring it up at the city council meeting, is that when we apply to rent an apartment, a casita, a home, what have you, we have to give everything. Your name, your birthday, your social security number, your bank account number, your credit statement, all these references, they dig deep into everything about us. We don't know anything about the landlords at all. It's so one-sided. So the balance of power could not be more lopsided. I've had horrible experiences with landlords here. For the most part, they're great. I just want to be clear. For the most part, here and in Los Angeles, I've had wonderful experiences with landlords, but I had one experience here that rocked me to my core, and it showed me experientially that some people are evil, that some people, like, truly have no integrity, no conscience, and will go out of their way to hurt other people. And I had no recourse as far as warning other people about this landlord. But if we had a super simple Yelp review, Yelp type, because screw like Yelp, the corporation that censors people, but a Yelp type, like user maintained landlord review website, that would help even out the balance of power. So if people had slumlords who were jacking their rent, who weren't fixing things, you know, who were dropping the ball, who were spying on them, as in the case of the disgusting landlord that I had, there would be a public record and other renters could be warned. And it also would put like social pressure on landlords to clean up their act. So, you know, this thing that I've seen, and I'm really excited for this to switch. There's this like weird, lazy thought process that has some people thinking just because we've moved down a certain path, be it Airbnb or a certain level of automation, or, you know, self-checkout machines or whatnot, that we can't roll it back, that we can't say, you know what, this was a mistake. Let's stop doing the thing that we're doing that no one likes. We can all do that. Like I mentioned at my mailbox place earlier this week, because they had, it was so stupid, but like they had in their computer system that I had three packages, but on the shelf, there are only two packages, and it took way too long for them to figure out it was a computer error, but I only had two packages. And I said, you know what, I so appreciate, you know, you guys always go above and beyond for me, and thank you for going the distance to figure this out. But I just want to let you know, like, we didn't have any of these problems until you guys implemented a computer system a year and a half ago. And one of the women who's only worked there for like a year, she's like, well, I don't know how we could even run this business without computers. And I'm like, it ran fine for decades without computers. Like, it's so much simpler when you have a human being checking in, like, oh, we have two packages here. I put two packages on the shelf. I write down two packages on this piece of paper that's analog, put it in the mailbox, done deal. But now, like, there's this weird kind of mind virus. I mean, it's probably just like some social engineered nonsense that gone along that like, oh, we can't roll it back. Oh, once we've instituted self-checkout, we can't get rid of these, even though everyone hates them and theft has skyrocketed. Like, yeah, you can do that. Everything can be rolled back. It's not really that hard. And honestly, with the trajectory that we're on in terms of the whole AI computer automated thing, at some point, we will decide that the smartest move is to roll it back. In my perspective, it would be smarter to do it now than wait until, you know, it becomes even messier. But this is kind of the primary mind control, the primary fiction that is driving the whole AI automation techno-fascist agenda is we don't have a choice. This is just how it's gonna be. And it's like, of course we have a choice. We can unplug everything. We can, you know, do away with facial scan. We can do away with two-factor authentication. We can do away with so much of it. We can roll it back. But notice in the entire, like, we have so many people saying, like, stupid shit, like, the future is female. Or smart stuff, which is like, we need to incorporate more feminine ways of being into steering our earthship, right? Like, this is what I talk about in this awesome book, The Language of Betterarchy, where I spend a lot of time unpacking the masculine feminine polarities that are driving our culture and explaining how the issue is not that we don't have enough vaginas in positions of leadership. The primary issue we're being called to course correct as a singular human species is to start to infuse as much feminine thought forms, perspective, and ways of being and doing into our cultural forward motionings as the masculine, so that we have an alchemical balance. The feminine is wholly missing from the entire technology conversation right now. Rooting it in that perspective, the masculine, capital M masculine, I'm not talking about dudes, talking about masculine, the polarities, the energetic polarities that drive everything in this third dimensional dualistic reality. So the masculine is forward motion. It's progress. Look at the bodies. Like, look at the structure of a masculine body. I'm talking about XY chromosomes and a double X body, right? The feminine receives the man into her. The man penetrates forward. Look at putting a plug into a wall. The wall socket that receives the plug is the feminine. The socket with the two, or the extension cord with the two pokey things, that's the masculine, which is penetrating, right? The masculine is, among the many characteristics that differentiate the masculine from the feminine, progress, innovation, what's next, what's new, and that's beautiful. We love all of that. But the feminine is the one who is holding the whole, is holding the humanity. And she is the one who's saying, or if it's the man who's holding the feminine, right? But as I'm anthropomorphizing these energetic polarities, thank you for rolling with me and not getting into like a pronoun tizzy or go get your trigger otter and come back when you've calmed your nervous system. But the feminine is the one who is saying, what is best for the greatest good? What is best for the whole of humanity, right? And so it's the feminine that has not yet been included in the technological conversation right now. It's the feminine that says, just because we can, is this our wisest move, right? Just because we can automate all the trucks and get rid of every human being in the trucking industry, is that our wisest move? Is that what's best for the human beings who used to make their living driving trucks? Is that what's best for every truck stop across the entire country that bakes homemade pie for the truckers who are road weary and turning in for the night? How many businesses are going to shut down if we give our allegiance to self-driving cars because that, you know, makes more money for Tesla or for Jeff Bezos or whatever, right? That lens of perception is wholly absent in this moment. Cancel, clear, delete. This lens of perception is what the entire technological conversation is asking for, would benefit from, right? I don't want to double down on the lack, but I'm trying to think how I even got into this perspective. I'm bringing it back to Airbnb, which I think was the whole point, is like, okay, well, just because we can bring this in and people can make money like this, is this what is in the best interest of our small community here in Santa Fe? Is this going to serve the greatest good? And I can tell you, as someone who lives here, it does not. It does not. It is verily destroyed and hyperinflated the rental market. It's created such a crisis of housing here. It's really devastating. So I propose getting rid of Airbnb. And what a lot of the pushback that I'll get on this is like, well, they're already here. We can't roll it back now. It's like, of course we can. We can change our minds at any moment. We could say we tried this. It didn't work. We can remove those permits and we can instead offer 100% of those 3,000 rentals to the people who actually live in and care about Santa Fe proper and send everyone else from out of town to our hotels and motels who could use the business. Like, it's such an obvious win-win, except for the greed monster, except for the greed frequency band, or as they talk about in reality transurfing, the greed pendulum that just wants to feed and energize itself. Okay. Now, moving on to the obelisk situation, which my friend went to the city council meeting to talk about. So I'm going to do my best to stay high level on this and not get into the weeds of the obelisk specifically. But as we will remember, 2020, 2021, There was kind of a flurry of large protests that were being supported by the powers that were, who were telling the rest of us that we couldn't gather for funerals or weddings or, religious worship. But it wasn't a problem to gather lawlessly in the streets, to set buildings on fire and cars on fire and deface public property, right? So during that beautiful moment, we had a protest here in Santa Fe that was largely populated by out-of-towners who are not from here, were not educated in Santa Fe history. And there was a large violent protest on the plaza. The plaza is like the center of downtown, where there is an obelisk which was put up. To, again, I'm not going to get into the weeds and the history, but it was basically acknowledging the end of the Civil War, the peace that was ultimately forged between the Spanish and the Indians. And then in the 70s, the placard on the obelisk was defaced, and Indians was etched out and replaced with the word savages, which, granted, is not a cool thing, but it was never part of the original dedication. It was something that was added on. And then there was another placard that, like, kind of explained and was the caveat for the uncool savages van I don't know why I'm blanking on the word, vandalism. So an angry crowd gathered. It was either 2020 or 2021. And our mayor here, who is not from here, he is from, I guess his most of his political history is in Washington State. He used to be the publisher of, I think it was Bloomberg or Fast Company, one of those magazines, propaganda rags. And his whole history, if if you feel like going into it, Mayor Weber, is as a socialist, a defund the police guy. Like, he's certainly in bed with all of the globalists. It's very clear. And his task here in Santa Fe, whether it's stated or not, appears to be to take a crowbar to the knees of our city and destroy it single-handedly. So when this angry crowd gathered in either 2020 or 2021, to take down the obelisk of their own accord, the Weber told law enforcement to stand down and allow them to do that. Now, since then, a historical preservation society here in Santa Fe sued the city of Santa Fe, and a federal judge decided, I think it was in December, that Santa Fe has to, the city of Santa Fe has to restore the obelisk, right? So instead of acknowledging the oopsie with humility and respect for the people of Santa Fe, the mayor has appealed the decision to restore the statue and is fighting it tooth and nail. Now, it's super controversial here in town, and again, I am not from here. I don't have an allegiance to it one way or the other, but what I do have an allegiance to is history and lawfulness. So I don't want to get into the weeds as to whether the statue needed to be removed or not. I know there's like a kind of a crew of younger Indian activists who are, they're the ones who are pushing that this statue has to be taken down. But here's the thing. We allegedly live in a constitutional republic. That being the case, our mayor, who was allegedly, and I cannot stress that word enough, who was allegedly voted into place by a fair, honest, democratic process, his role as a civil servant is to enact the will of the people. His role as mayor is to surmise and receive the will of the people he allegedly represents, and then to enact the majority's desires. What it is not his job to do is to unilaterally decide based on his own personal allegiances or financial interests or weakness of character or people-pleasing tendencies or whatever it is. It is not for him to unilaterally tell law enforcement to allow a crowd of angry, violent people to deface and destroy public property. So my perspective on this is super simple. I don't have an opinion, except, I mean, my opinion is that when you erase a people's history, that's a fast track to fascism. And anyone who studied history knows that, right? So we know that that is a strategy of authoritarians and tyrants to attempt to destroy people's history. But the people who took it upon themselves to take that statue down, as I understand it, are not from here. And I have talked to people from Santa Fe, whether they're Indians, whether they're Spanish, and that is the dominant culture here. The white people came in after and all lived here completely harmoniously until, ta-da, Obama, 2008, when the whole country and all of the cities went to total divisive, identitarian, divide and conquer shit, thanks to his Smith-Mundt Modernization Act and all of his efforts to propagandize the shit out of the people into these various identitarian subgroups. But there wasn't a problem. We never saw these problems pre-2008. But my point is, let's say it was the will of the people of Santa Fe that that statue be removed. Then that's something that is done through a democratic process. And that it's not removed in violence and anger, in defiance of actual law. It is done lawfully. So, you know that expression, the way you do one thing is the way we do everything, right? If I, as I've been prone to do, so I've been prone to overdo everything, to hit everything about 1,000 times too hard, right? Anyone who knows me or has been tracking me through my writings knows this, right? When I took herbs to empty out my womb, I took quadruple doses of everything every 4 hours for 6 days, right? I hit it way too freaking hard. If I, you know, in the past, am going to, say, you know, pitch my coloring book to some publications, I'm gonna pitch 50 publications, right? It's like if I'm gonna exercise you know, my biceps, in the past I would do like, you know, 10 times more reps than everyone else, right? The way I do one thing is the way I do everything, which for me historically has been way too fucking aggressive. Luckily, it's 2025, and I am transmuting those outdated tendencies and moving into more grace and relaxation. There's a similar expression, which is the way you start something sets the tone and the frequency for how that's going to go, which is why I have learned, you know, if I'm going to start a new project, if I'm start a new book, if I'm going to create a course, I make damn sure I am in a happy, relaxed, expansive space, because I know the way anything is initiated, that is the energy that's going to infuse the finished product. So the fact that this obelisk was removed in violent, angry, authoritarian, non-democratic chaos really bodes unwell for whatever may or may not go in that place. And also remembering that this is like a geomantic, a localized anchor point for the ideals held by the city of Santa Fe, right? For, you know, what are the core values of Santa Fe? How do we want the culture of our city to go, right? So if the changing of that guard, if you know, again, if it was a democratic decision that represented the will of the most people here, then I would hope that it was done respectfully and peacefully, and in a way that honored that history and all of the people that that represented. But it wasn't. And that is my primary point on this, is it doesn't matter whether it was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. The way it was done is 1,000% the wrong way, unless the intention of the mayor is to sow more violence, more lawlessness, more division. I mean, the division that that unilateral decision has created in this community is freaking devastating. And so I defer back to, like, it doesn't matter what the will of the people was, that didn't represent the will of the people, and it was done in such a violent way. And this is something that I want us to consider, because I know ours isn't the only city that had a statue taken down by a violent, angry mob. So when we're looking at the larger, I very often come back to Yuri Bezmenov's ideological subversion, and we talk about demoralization being like the primary entry point for tyranny and authoritarianism. All we need to look at is, are our so-called elected leaders fostering violence, fostering lawlessness, fostering division? Then we have a problem. And we don't really have to overthink the specifics, of the details of the acts they've taken. Why are our elected leaders fostering this kind of violence, lawlessness, and division? And why are they still leaders? And I use the word leader erroneously, because they're not leaders, they're civil servants. I feel like leader is a term that is to be earned, and I'm not seeing these civil servants earning the identity of leaders. It's so rare in, where we're at now as America. So this is something that, of course, I would love to be writing out for any of our local papers, but the censorship machine is so over the top. It's verily impossible to get, any intelligent, nuanced ideas into the discourse. And I had a call this week with the head of the Historical Preservation Society, who did sue the city. And this is what he was saying, is like, it's such an unfortunate situation with the censorship, because there's not one local paper that's willing to publish any stories about the obelisk that aren't in full support of this lawless, violent destruction and the attack on the local culture and the local history that it necessarily entails. And it's, obviously, if you're listening to me, one of my primary frustrations is, like, how do we break through the censorship industrial complex? And I believe this leads us to the true meat of the matter of today's podcast, but I'm just going to check my notes for a second. Yeah, it does. So I'm going to do a screen share, and we're going to go through a little bit of a movie that I tried to start watching. So I took a baseball bat to my television back in 2000 and made a concerted effort to steer clear of modern media, because, for all the obvious reasons. That does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you are inspired to tune into the second half, you can find it over on my Locals and my Patreon communities. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. At both communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content. I'm also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannycats.com. It's the best way to stay abreast of my every next book release, live event, course drop, webinar drop, special discounts, new products. I have reinstituted my t-shirt and product line, and the only place where you can stay abreast of all of those offerings is by way of my newsletter. So run, don't walk to sign up at dannykatz.com. I think that does it for housekeeping. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.